Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you'll need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hello, and thank you so much for joining us for your ROH and TNA post show. I got a permanent co-host. We got a wrestling week that is booked for Kate. We got Badu Tito on this episode. We got SB3 doing the CEO dance. I'm loving
it. I feel sexy.
I'm loving it. You should. You look sexy, damn it. We're all sexy here on Thursday night. So get in those super chats and leave a thumbs up on this video if you would be so kind. Helps people find us in that algorithm, which ROH and TNA, we really benefit from. We really, really appreciate that. We'll also take a moment to remind you to subscribe to Fightful Select, where I geeked out because I saw the news that my boys at M&M are going to be on Collision, the former Maximum Male Models. That was news that was broken over there, as well as so much contract news, Ricochet and Samantha Irvin updates, tons of stuff, and Clash at the Castle also coming up around the corner. So you know there's always more scoops coming out of PLEs and pay-per-views. But enough about Fightful Select. Go subscribe. You know the drill. I'm here with SP3. SP3, how are you doing?
I am doing wonderful, Kate. Second week in as your permanent co-host. You're telling me before we go live that I have tenure and that I'm getting a paycheck. And it's great. It's a great time to be alive. That's why I had to do CEO dance, because I'm feeling sexy today. And we got some Ring of Honor to talk about, which I did get upset at one part of the show. So fair warning. I may offend some people out there because I was quite upset with one part of the show. But other than that, I got what I was looking for. Last week, we talked about the great match with Kyle Fletcher and Dalton Castle. And I literally said, I was like, seems like Kyle Fletcher's the only one that's set up to get a shot at the Ring of Honor World Championship. And then we watch Wednesday and he pins the Ring of Honor World Champion. Vindication for me.
I mean, certainly feels like we're heading in that direction. Also kind of feels that way because there are no real rightful challengers in ROH right now. But we're going to talk about all that and more. There were also some parts of the show that I did not adore. But we're going to talk.
Oh, we're on the same page. Look at
we
that.
We are on the that. Same page. And it's nothing to do with Harley Cameron. I think she actually looks great. But we're going to get into all of that. Did any news that break that is not Jeff Hardy related? We have a question in the chat about. I don't know about on TNA if that's what you're referring to, but it looks like they had a banger of an episode. Certainly feels like he might be headed back to the Hardy compound, but Joel and Cresta will have you covered on all of that. Also, certainly feels like there's been more NXT crossover on the way. There was a very heavy hint from Cody Rhodes about NXT having a battle royal that may involve people from other locker rooms. Genuinely think it would be hysterical if it was just Raw and SmackDown. But Matt Hardy already declaring for it, so doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. But we'll let them talk about TNA World. We're here to talk to you about tonight's episode of Ring of Honor. Good and bad. I do always appreciate with these episodes, like, man, it's so easy to watch 1 hour of wrestling. It's so easy to watch like an hour, hour 15 of wrestling. Like, I'm so used to 2 and 3 hour shows that are a slog that as long as it's concise like this, I'm a happy camper. What did you think kind of overall? I know we had some ups and downs tonight.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. This show is so much more digestible at being an hour and change. Like, I look at my clock and we're at the main event and I'm like, oh, it just turned 8 o'clock. Oh, this is great. This is great. Yeah. We're about to finish up. You know, yeah, it's a much more digestible story being told. You know, you got the women's division, what's going on with Velvet and Billy Starks with the women's TV title. You see contenders kind of taking their places and making challenges for the women's world championship. And then, like we said, we got some development in the main event scene over on Dynamite. So this was kind of like a nice little kind of follow-up. I wish that they would have mentioned that on today's show, like edited in, because you did have such a big thing happen with the TV champion beating the world champion. I wish they would have just edited in just real quick, just have, you know, call it, Tony calls up Ian or Caprice and be like, oh, we need you to do this voiceover because we just had our TV champion beat the world champion and we're going to show it on today's show. That's the only thing that I thought was missing from today's show.
And you know they would, because Ian Riccaboni would be like, I'm at an Iron Pigs game, but I'll run into the bathroom right now and do it. Okay? That is Ian Riccaboni style. I'm very excited. Collision is coming to his hometown of Allentown. I will be at that taping. But let's dive into tonight's shows, guys. Get in those super chats if there's anything that you want to cover about ROH in general or tonight's episode. Or SP3 has another list that we're going to talk about on our way through the show. But we do start off with our proving ground match between Billy Starks and Sandra Moon, who's returning. I love that they brought someone back who was previously in the tournament. Building off of that is very refreshing to see people who were in the original tournament coming back here. Same complaint that women that are in the locker room should want these shots, but the match was very good. Sandra Moon is very good. Billy Starks is great. We talked about this last week, but I continue to be surprised at how well she's adapted to this heel character. Stuff like toward the end, right before she locks in that submission, going to the ropes and then hopping down to the chorus of boos. Like, she was doing it just to get that crowd reaction. She has translated her heel persona to the ring so, so perfectly. Also love Sandra Moon selling the back in this. It made her a little bit more protected. These proving ground matches are at least getting a little bit longer too, or at least able to buy in a little bit more. Especially with someone who was formerly in the tournament, SP3, like, not my favorite that it's not women that are signed to the brand getting these shots, but for what they did give us, I really liked it.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one. These are two ladies that I first saw in like GCW. So it was kind of like a GCW ROH crossover, which happens a lot more often than not on these Ring of Honor shows in the past when you had guys like, you know, Gringo Loco and Jack Cartwheel. So it was cool to see it in the women's division where Billy is more of like the Ring of Honor kind of stalwart, but Sandra Moon is known for the independent scene. I thought they worked pretty well with each other. Like you said, Sandra Moon did a great job of selling the back, even to the point that Billy wasn't expecting her to sell the back after she got thrown into the corner and she just goes down and she starts selling it. So Billy had to kind of adjust. And I like how she was able to kind of pivot from what she wanted to do and just started stomping at the back, and just her facial expression just scream heel and scream as much work as she's done with Athena. You could see Athena kind of translating over to her. And I thought Ian and Caprice did a good job of kind of telling that story as well. So love the finish with her going to the top rope, getting the applause, like she was going to do something and coming down to get all the heat and then finishing her off with the submission. So we're seeing the further kind of evolution of Billy Starks. Now that she's a champion, she's showing that cockiness and that kind of swagger of a champion. So it's good to see.
Agreed. She was kind of on a mean streak before. Now we've got a little bit of an arrogance thrown in that, which is kind of what we got from Athena as well. You saw her confidence and cockiness build from that heel turn. But one thing that I always appreciate, and it shows up more later, but worth noting here as well, Ian and Caprice, when speaking to women's wrestling, do it with the exact same respect and treat it completely equal to men's wrestling. And I just really appreciate that. That's not to say other commentators don't, But there's just like an extra something there with them talking. Like, there's just an extra authenticity with the two of them, I feel like. I hate to pull out like the as a woman thing, but as a woman, it really does feel like when they do things like mention Athena's name up there with Nigel McGuinness and Brian Danielson and Samoa Joe, and when they talk about Alex Windsor being one of the best Rev Pro champions of all time, not just women's champions of all time, like, there's just certain things that they do that make it just feel like it's all the same product. And I really, really appreciate that. I really, really appreciate it. But
it was that one point during this matchup where they also mentioned that Billy is among the youngest Ring of Honor World Champions, along with Mark Briscoe, who won the tag team titles before the age of 19, and Billy won the TV title before the age of 19. So just making that kind of comparison, in your head, they're basically putting Billy on the same level as a young Mark Briscoe. So that's great stuff. And I do agree with you. I can't say it from, you know, a woman's perspective. That's why I respect that you're the one saying it here. But as a viewer of Ring of Honor and being a man, I do appreciate that from Ian and Caprice.
Yeah, the comparisons to Mark Briscoe, especially because there is such a rich history to dive into, that the more they do that, the more you do kind of like put people on the level of a lot of who we consider now like wrestling legends in the making. So it is really refreshing. They add so much to the Ring of Honor experience. I talk about it all the time, but it shows up all the time for me. So
yeah, they're among the best commentary team. And to mention, because we're talking about the women's division so much, it really feels like in a smaller fashion, like how NXT kind of really led to the women's revolution on the WWE main roster. It really feels like ROH was the place that started the women's evolution on the AEW main roster, because it was first, you know, Athena being raised as this, you know, dominant champion, and then they made stars like Billy Starks and Willow Nightingale in the early days when they were in Universal last year, and then Willow comes to the AEW main roster, wins the Owen Cup, and now is in more prominent role, had that great feud with Mercedes Moné, is having another great feud right now with Chris Statlander. It's to the point that, you know, I've been seeing it all over Twitter, and I've been saying it since I was echoing it at the end of 2023. I was like, ever since the end of All Out 2023, the women's division in AEW changed. It was way before Mercedes even got here. They really started focusing. That's when we started seeing the focus on Timeless Toni Storm. That's when we started seeing the focus on Julia Hart. They made those stars. They revitalized Willow Nightingale. You got Thunder Rosa back. You got Serena Deeb back. You signed Deonna Purrazzo. And now right now they have some of the best stories on AEW with Timeless Toni Storm, Mariah May, Amina Shirakawa, the best love triangle this side of Matt Hardy, Edge, and Lita. I really am enjoying the fact that we are seeing overall in the Tony Khan owned promotions, whether it be Ring of Honor or AEW, women has so much of a better spot than it did, say, 2 years ago or at the beginning when he first got Ring of Honor. It's come a long way, and it started really with Ring of Honor really making an importance of the women's division.
It did, and there's been such a, man, if there's anything that we've seen of recent, especially, like, people get injured. Really big stars get injured all the time. Like, Kenny Omega, MJF, Adam Cole, like, top names. And you have to assume, I never want to borrow trouble in this way, but, like, if that happens with the women's division, you have all these people that you can call on that have been rocking and rolling here in ROH, too. They can easily cross over to the main roster. And I would like to see some stables get built out. I feel like that's the next thing. I've been calling for Serena Deeb's dojo to have students.
I said this when they played the vignettes at the end of last year. I was like, she needs to have Megan Bain as a heater to be her first student. Then she can get younger people like a Layla Hirsch or you know, Diamante or whoever. I agree with you 100%. The Deeb's dojo stable needs to be a thing.
I think so too. And she's so great, but I think promos are not her strongest forte. And this gives her something to build a ton of story around without having to lean into that too hard. So I'm all about that idea. I think Rita Shafir could come up in that. I think a returning Tay Mello could come up in that. Legit Layla feels like the most perfect, obvious one. So I think as we start to see things like that, hopefully evolve, ROH is going to become invaluable in that regard, because you're just going to have people being able to get pulled up into storylines real fast.
Or we can finally, you know, make the Blackpool Combat Club what Bryan Danielson originally wanted it to be, where they are training the young people, and it doesn't just have to be just Wheeler Yuta as your only student, because that makes no sense. You talked about Lee Moriarty and Daniel Garcia at the beginning of it. If you can't get those guys because those guys have different roles now, get a Layla Hirsch, get a Marina Shafir. We know about the Marina Shafir and John Moxley relationship in real life, you know, all the work they do over at Wrestling Revolver. Bring it over to AEW and have her a part of the Blackpool Combat Club. Having these women involved in like the male stables, it will help them get more TV time. It will help them get a prominent role. I totally am down for all of this.
I love that. And a really good point, because we are seeing that in the best trends picture, right? We're seeing the Orange Cassidy and Willow Nightingale thing. So I like that AEW is making an effort to kind of weave women and men's storyline a little bit more closely. I wish we'd see that more in ROH, to be honest, because the women's division is so strong. Why don't we have like mixed tags with the Infantry and Trish Adora versus like two other people and somebody that Trish Adora can actually feud with instead of jobbing to Harley Cameron, which we'll talk about in a minute. But we move on to Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty versus Jacoby Watts and Nick Comoroto. This made a little bit more sense than previous weeks, but they still have some work to do with it. It was a very fun match overall, because Shane Taylor has the same, was raised in the same school as like an Eddie Kingston, I feel like, where I'm like, I just want to watch this guy beat the crap out of everybody. B, believe he wants to beat the crap out of everybody. Face heel doesn't matter. And C, I look at that guy and I'm like, yeah, he can beat the crap out of everybody. So I like that Nick Comoroto was in there against someone with some size. Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty create such an interesting combination. But the story with this is you have Jacoby Watts blind tagging to try and get credit for the pin that Comoroto had Moriarty on the mat for. But Moriarty kicked out and Watts tagged back out. So we see Watts finally getting the win in the ring, but he's doing it just to kind of try and get credit for this pin, which is good storytelling there. And then you just get a classic Shane Taylor hard knockout punch, and Comoroto doesn't know where he is. And you got him taking the L once again. See, these are productive losses that are telling a story. We talked last week about that it's not perfect as a story, but these losses mean something, and that's usually all I ask for, is like, if the wins are advancing people, great. If the losses are productive also, beautiful. That's all I want. What did you think of what we got here?
I'm now calling Nick Comoroto everyone's favorite 80s wrestler, because the look is totally out of the 80s. And yeah, I like the story development with Jacoby Watts trying to get the win and then immediately just tagging out. And you heard the little snicker from the fans in the building when he did that. That was fun. And it seems like it's getting over a little bit here. So I like that development there. I like the fact that we have Shane Taylor Promotions back in Ring of Honor. You know, they have been a good undercard to mid-card stable on Collision over the last couple of weeks, and have really kind of made the most of their minutes, but I feel like they have a higher ceiling in Ring of Honor. They could potentially be tag team champions. You can get Shane Taylor to be a contender for the ROH World Championship, something that he always wanted and always set his sights on during his original Ring of Honor run, but he was so dominant in other divisions, say the TV division, six-man division, that he never was able to reach that mountaintop. And him and Mark Briscoe have a ton of history. He had a great rivalry with Jay Briscoe, so I would love to see them make him and heat him up to be a contender for Mark Briscoe later this year. So I like Shane Taylor Promotions being on both Ring of Honor and AEW Collision, and the win here just makes sense.
Win here does make sense. I only ask, where are you a trio and where are you a tag team? Because that's something that they are wildly inconsistent about, but you're throwing around some pretty big names there, SP3. Maybe some future Hall of Famers.
Indeed. So last week, I can't remember the person who put it, but they gave a super chat and they suggested one of the lists that I actually was like, you know what? I'm gonna keep the other Nigel list on the back burner. I'm not gonna, you know, overexpose Nigel. You know, we're gonna keep him safe, keep him strong. And we are gonna do a different list this week. And I am going to give you guys, because, you know, AEW or ROH or Tony Khan, whoever you want to blame, didn't give us a ROH, a Ring of Honor Hall of Fame class of 2023. We've already passed Super Card of Honor, where they did it in 2022, where they announced the first class of, you know, Ring of Honor Hall of Fame. So I have done the privilege. You can thank me later, Tony. I know you're watching. You always watch our reviews. I am going to give you the Ring of Honor Hall of Fame class of 2024, the prestigious honor that has been voted by, you know, the committee of one, SP3. So I have a list of names here that I have great resumes for all of these guys. So I have someone for the Legacy Award that was given to Gary Silkin in 2022, but I have four names and one group that is going to be inducted into this class that I'm going to read out throughout our podcast here. So the first name for the class of 2024 Ring of Honor Hall of Fame is none other than former AEW International Champion, former ROH World Champion, former ROH Television Champion, and former ROH World Tag Team Champion, the master of Neck Strong, Roderick Strong, is the first name for the class of 2024 Ring of Honor Hall of Fame. Roderick Strong is one of the OGs upon OGs that I discovered in Ring of Honor. Him and Austin Aries had a great tag team title run back in 2006. Of course, he was a part of Generation Next, one of the first premier stables in Ring of Honor history. He's a former Ring of Honor World Champion. Like I said, I've read out the whole resume, a Triple Crown champion, you know, House of Truth, everything in between. Great rivalries, great matches with Bryan Danielson, Samoa Joe, CM Punk. The list goes on and on. Roderick Strong, immediately I was like, hey, that's a perfect name to have in this class of 2024. So that is the first name read out for the Ring of Honor Hall of Fame class of 2024.
Can't argue with that as a pick. Feels like a great one. One thing that I love about Roddy is there's so much talk about like how people evolve and stuff. He found such a balance so early in his career with evolving, but like being just so himself everywhere he's gone. Like, it doesn't matter the environment, doesn't matter if it's singles, doesn't matter if it's tag, doesn't matter if he's a champion, doesn't matter if he's a heel or face. There's certain things that are Roddy Strong hallmarks, and he established them so early in his career. And it's just, it's very cool to see how many years he has behind him. But like, there are things about very early Roddy Strong matches that feel so true today. And I just think it's so cool how aware he was of his identity so early in his career. I just think it's impressive. It's very, very impressive.
And the fact that all these years later, he's probably in the best shape of his entire career. Because I remember first watching Ring of Honor in like 2004, and he was a chubby kind of guy or a stocky kind of guy. And that's why all those chops just echoed throughout those small buildings that they used to run back in those days 20 years ago. And he's just gotten into the best shape of his career and just been so consistent in delivering great professional wrestling matches.
He really has. He's been... because AEW got kind of weird there for a little bit at the end of 2023, okay? And then it got back on track with the C2. And kind of in that reestablishment, as soon as he switched from silly to serious, he, I think, has been so integral to the health of AEW kind of rebounding a little bit, which is really, really cool. So good stuff there. But we move on to something that didn't feels so great to me. And I love both Red Velvet and I love Viva Vaughn, but there were just some weird chemistry things in here that I feel like maybe missed a little bit. Some spots that literally missed a little bit. And Red Velvet gets the win over Viva Vaughn, as you would expect, but it just never quite clicked in. I'm a huge fan of both of their work. Viva Vaughn has done some really, really cool stuff in New Japan. There was some stuff that almost felt like Red Velvet returned to habits that she had pre-injury, if that makes sense, where sometimes it just felt like she was maybe overshooting things or whatever, but some good stuff in here still, and the right person winning. The arm breaker submission that turned into the other arm breaker, I thought was like a cool exchange that we got in this. But for me, I was looking forward to it, and it just never quite clicked into the gear that I think I was hoping it would. Very different sizes between these two, very different ring styles. Just read to me as a little bit off kilter, but curious to know what you think. What do you think of this match?
It felt like they were like, hey, we got 4 minutes and we're going to do all the crazy stuff that we want to do in this matchup. And I thought it was going to be good with, you know, Viva Van when she did a little step to the second rope, step up to the top, arm drag off the rope. I was like, okay, this could be really good. And then it was just a couple of moves, like you said, that just felt off, like Red Velvet doing kind of like a diamond dust without going to the second rope. She just did it on as Viva Van had it on her knees. And I don't know what she did, but it wasn't that move. But sometimes that just happens. You have two talented women here in Viva Van and Red Velvet, but sometimes the chemistry is just off or you don't have enough time. Like I said, they only had 4 minutes to work with. I thought that, you know, Red Velvet was getting in her strikes towards the end a lot more stiffer than she was at the beginning, where she was kind of just seemed like it was kind of tentative, it seemed, or just the chemistry was off. But Red Velvet picking up the win and then calling out Billy Starks, it progresses that story. So I'm looking forward to it. Like we said last week, that kind of seems tailor-made to be the women's TV title matchup coming up at Death Before Dishonor. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Red Velvet can do next time out, when hopefully she has a little bit more time or a little bit better chemistry with our opponent.
Agreed. And you're right. There was a very short amount of time given to this match, and they probably were trying to, as the kids say, get their shit in. And it just never really fully clicked. But if you're not familiar with Viva Van, she's been on ROH a couple of times before, but yeah, some really outstanding work, probably one of the top unsigned talent in women's wrestling right now, I would say. I think she'll be snatched up sooner than later. But cool to see her returning. Cool to see Sandra Moon returning too. Like, that's good stuff when, even with people that might not necessarily be signed, we're seeing familiar names. It just makes it a little bit richer of an experience. And who, I must ask, has made ROH a richer place? So much so that SP3 wants to put them in the 2024 Hall of Fame.
And I'm seeing some great suggestions in the chat. And, you know, guys like, you know, Kevin Steen, Kevin Owens, they were on my short list. I won't front you. But I'm also looking to, you know, get people that can actually show up to my Hall of Fame ceremony. I'm sorry.
That's fair.
I'm trying to give you the most realistic, like, if Tony Khan probably could do a Hall of Fame like ceremony, these are the people that he would call on that can be in the Hall of Fame, that can actually show up to this. There's only one person on my list that probably couldn't show up, so I will read them out next. And they are the Legacy Award winner, and, you know, the first ever Legacy Award winner for the Hall of Fame class of 2022 was Kerry Silken. Kerry Silken, founder that really, you know, brought them out the doldrums when, you know, Rob Feinstein did all his BS. But there was someone else there that really helped things. That is a four-time Booker of the Year for the Wrestling Observer newsletter. And I don't always like mentioning that newsletter, but it is prestigious. Booker of the Year, Gabe Sapolsky. Like, Gabe was like the creative force behind Ring of Honor when it really came to prominence. Like, when I talked about it earlier today on True Hill Heat YouTube channel, the Triple H Reign of Terror is probably my most horrifying memories of wrestling. That literally almost made me not be a wrestling fan. I had to stop watching WWE for a while. But it was Ring of Honor and the Joe versus Punk series of matches that got me into independent wrestling. And it was Gabe Sapolsky's creative mind that got me into Ring of Honor, whether it was Punk and Raven, whether it was Homicide versus Joe. There was just so many great storylines back in 2004 that got me into independent wrestling, and then so on and so forth, whether it be dream matches like Joe versus Kobashi. He is the mind that was behind a lot of this stuff.
Age of the Fall in 2007. That was great. 2006 Ring of Honor is probably my favorite year of Ring of Honor because that's when I fell in love with it. And the Ring of Honor CCW rivalry, Gabe Sapolsky is the creative mind behind that. And I felt like that was the storyline that really got everybody into Ring of Honor back in 2006. And I got to give love to Gabe Sapolsky, despite, you know, some other stuff that I hear about him, but everybody has those type of things. It's a wrestling business, for God's sakes. But
hard to get in and out of the wrestling business without hearing something about everybody. But I'm with you. Very well thought out legacy award winner there. I feel like Gabe's probably underrated in the contributions to ROH because I think a lot of people identify Kerry Silken with it because Cornette, for better or worse, took up a lot of oxygen in the ROH legacy. But actually, I would say for better and worse. I think there's better and worse there with Cornette. As I feel like about a lot of his contributions to wrestling. But Gabe Sapolsky, underrated in the ROH zeitgeist, I think, and a good call. A good call.
And he's got a nice role being a consultant for WWE now. You know, he had Evolve for a while, which was another great independent, promotion that I used to go to all the Evolve shows in Queens back in 2018, 2019. So I have good memories of that era of Gabe Sapolsky's work as well. And I don't know particularly, he's came up with this storyline in WWE, but he's got a nice paying job in WWE. So I'm happy.
Yeah, and he was with MLW for a minute too, I think.
Yeah.
He's made his imprint on the industry and on ROH for sure. Very, very well chosen. Well chosen there. Well, we move on to the multi-man matches of the evening. Like, we got so much talent in a very short amount of time, but this ended up being more fun than I thought it was going to be. Top Flight with Darius and Dante in Action Andretti defeating Lance Archer and the Righteous Dark Order, which was Uno, Silver, and Reynolds. And the Infantry, Carly Bravo and Sean Dean with Dalton Castle, which was a combo I did not know I needed until they walked down the ramp together. Just the amount of charisma and one, entrance was unreal to me. But very, very fun. A lot happened here, and a lot of it was very good. And this felt really well produced considering how much talent was in there and that I feel like everybody had stories and everybody kind of had some chance to shine. But early on here, we have Dalton Castle, who has not really recovered from the loss to Kyle Fletcher. He's in the opening of this, just on Lance Archer about blocking the camera for his entrance, which is so, so, so funny. You got Action Andretti and Top Flight, who just were, I felt like this was one of their more versatile performances as a trio because they were in there with so many guys and so different. Like, the Infantry and Dalton Castle are very different from Lance Archer and the Righteous are very different from the Dark Order. So they did a good job, I felt like, adapting to everything that was thrown their way. You had the Righteous being kind of bored in this, which I thought was cute. Like, they were just kind of on the outside and then would jump in and triple team people when they wanted to. And then the Dark Order are just absolute workhorses doing what they do best. Really, really, really good stuff. And then the Infantry and Castle were kind of not as involved except for the hot suplexes that Dalton Castle came in with, just grabbing everybody that he could. But this was a lot of fun. And you have Andretti and Top Flight winning. This was a four-corner survival match, I want to say, I remember correctly. Yeah, so good there. We got to see our six-man belt holders around at some point. That would be nice. Because these things need contendership. And I would like to see anything get built for this pay-per-view that we have coming up on the men's side of things at all. Going to be Queen Amanada and Athena probably. Going to be Billy Starks and Red Velvet probably. I got no idea what the hell's going on in the men's division, except maybe it feels now like Kyle Fletcher versus Mark Briscoe, but we'll see if they follow through with that.
We shall see. But yeah, I agree with you. I thought this was very well thought out and laid out with what was it, 12 guys in this matchup, and they're killing me. With last week we got a triple threat trios matchup, and I was like, I've never seen that before, and now I definitely
they're like more trios.
I've never seen a four quarters survival trios matchup. Like, do you have that many guys that you call out to these tapings, Tony, that you have to do a four quarters trios matchup? That's
were you
insane.
Used for collision? No, get out there is what it feels like.
Get on out here. Dalton Castle.
Get on out there. We're spilling the box of superstars in the back right now. That's what we're doing.
Hey, we had three regular, you know, trios that we know of with Lance Archer and the Righteous, which I feel like they've made a great match together ever since they were like paired up when Jake Roberts, you know, came out with the Righteous last year. I thought that was a nice little pairing. Action Andretti and Top Flight have been one of the better trios in Ring of Honor and AEW, you know, just as far as having really good matches whenever they come out and how they fit so well together. And I like the story that's developing over on Collision as far as, you know, Shane Taylor Promotions kind of targeting those guys and calling out the fact that Shane Taylor thinks that Action Andretti is the only tough one in that group. So I like that. That's been kind of brewing as far as like last week's Collision. And then you got, you know, Dark Order, who picked up the win last week. So I thought maybe they're getting some momentum and they'll be the challengers for the Bang Bang Gang at Death Before Dishonor. But nope, they were actually the team that got pinned. So much for that. I just want them to make us feel like these multi-trio matches are building towards something. I don't really need the Bang Bang Gang here because I feel like they're too big to be on Ring of Honor weekly television.
They could be an attraction, promo would be nice.
Yeah. A promo would be nice because they're going to be at the Collision tapings where you tape ROH anyway. So at least give them a promo where they're like, hey, we saw the Dark Order get the win in the triple threat. We saw Top Flight and Action Andretti. And then they make them face each other for like a number one contendership. Maybe you do something like that. I just need them to show up for the pay-per-view. And as long as they do that, I think I'm fine with them. But you got to make us feel like these multi, you know, if you're going to have a four corners survival trios matchup, it should be for something. I'm just saying, at least put them in line or say that they're
contendership. Yeah,
you know, try out the rankings that you forgot about in AEW. Try it out in Ring of Honor for the trios division.
I miss the rankings in ROH more than I miss them in any other brand because it was so well done before they shut down. And honestly, I feel like Lance Archer and the Righteous are too good of a trio to be tossed in these things. And with the characters that they have, I feel like everything that they do should be very intentional. And I think if you want to make a trio, they should be the ones to win. From if it's like they're being if the unified titles are still defended separately, which they have done for some reason, like I don't know why you unify titles to have them defended separately. But they did it with the Continental Classic, so I'm assuming it's the same rules there. I really think they could be something special. I think it's such an interesting combination because Lance Archer and Dutch are such different types of big guys that you have two really big guys and a smaller guy who is very weird in playing mind games. But it's not like they're just two guys who are muscle. Like they do very, very different things in the ring. So
that's true.
I would like to see them get made into something important at some point.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Honestly, I saw Lance Archer in Ring of Honor, and I was like, he's way too big to even be in this trio. He should be in the world championship division. He should be a challenger for Mark Briscoe. There's certain guys who, you know, may have not, you know, reached the championships, and Lance Archer got close to so many championships. He faced, you know, Hangman Adam Page in a Texas death match for the AEW World Championship. He won the IWGP US Championship from John Moxley in a Texas death match. He's had shots at the TNT Championship, making it to the finals of the original tournament. I feel like he's come so close so many times to titles in AEW. Why not put him in Ring of Honor, where his ceiling might be bigger, where he's one of your bigger stars? Like him, Johnny TV, Shane Taylor, these are guys that should be challenging for Mark Briscoe in the Ring of Honor World Championship division.
I feel like they had to get Lance Archer out of that slot of guy that loses to the champion or is like the title adjacent guy. And then they just didn't do anything beyond that. And he's ridiculous. Like, he's so good. So I would like to see that be the case. But guys, please leave a thumbs up on this video. We are working our way through a couple more matches here before the TNA crew comes on. Feel free to get in those super chats. We got some next ones coming up about this because we all hated what happened. Oh, no, that's the next match, actually. My bad. I'm just so anxious to talk about what the hell are they doing to Trisha Dora. But before that, we get Alex Windsor's ROH debut. She's alongside Marina Shafir and Diamante, which is a very fun trio. And they defeat Abaddon, Lady Frost, and Layla Hirsch. And you had Layla Hirsch, who significantly shorter than Alex Windsor in this, at the top rope. And you get her running into a Shining Wizard, or I don't know if she calls it this, but commentary definitely called it the Shining Windsor, which I liked. And she gets the win for her team. So contending for that New Japan title and showing up here in ROH. Nice to see Alex Windsor in the States, an absolutely outstanding talent out of the UK scene. Rev Pro champion, very cool style, very cool awareness of who she is in the ring. This was a lot of fun. And we're also seeing some good stuff out of Marina Shafir too. Like, she's always, I think at one point Caprice on commentary was like, she's always grabbing something. Like, if you're grappling with her, she's always reaching for something. Even when she's trying to escape, she's like grabbing your wrist on the next move or whatever. So some good stuff in here from her as well. Not necessarily a stakes heavy thing. Nice to see Diamante back here, but a good trios match. What did you think?
Yeah, I enjoyed this one. I even liked Marina Shafir at one point when they were doing like double teams and slamming each other onto the opponent. She slammed, I think it was Diamante, onto Abaddon's legs. I was like, I've never seen that before. Like, are you trying to hurt your partner and the opponent at the same time? So that was interesting. So yeah, I liked Alex Windsor picking up the victory here. She's got a big match with Timeless Toni Storm tomorrow on AEW Rampage. And commentary actually mentioned that. So I was like, once again, why you can't mention what happened on Dynamite? So like, that was cool. And you know, Windsor is so talented, one of the best like unsigned talents in professional wrestling, man or female. What she did over in the UK scene with her rivalry with Dani Luna over the Rev Pro Women's Championship was great stuff and really got her attention over here in the States. She's got a visa and she's using the most of it, whether it be bookings in Ring of Honor, AEW, New Japan Pro Wrestling. Had a great match with Stephanie Vaquer earlier this year, so I'm looking forward to the match with Toni Storm.
As am I. That'll be some good stuff. A lot of great women's wrestling under the AEW umbrella. Like you said, some of my favorite stuff that's going right now is women's wrestling. So hell of a turnaround. Matthew Hook's calling for a stable of Mercedes with Camille, Megan Bain, and the Renegade Twins. Mm. I kind of liked this thought. I would have liked this if it came out of the storyline we just got and Mercedes turned super heel and was like, you tried to come for my career when you broke my ankle. I'm coming for your title. I'm coming for your friends. And like put everybody on blast. I don't know what the deal with Megan Bain is. I think there might, I think Sean had said he's suspicious that there was outside interest now, because I don't know if it was an exclusive deal, but certainly feels like she and Camille, we haven't seen either of. Camille, if they snatched her up, I would imagine it would have been to something exclusive because there was bartering interest. But Megan Bain is an interesting one because I feel like there have been several opportunities where she could have come in specific roles where I feel like Camille's probably a standalone. The Renegade Twins, it would be nice to see them do something cohesive, but we don't really have a women's tag division, so a stable would be great. But I think they want Mercedes to rock and roll on her own for a little bit, would be my guess. Maybe with a heel turn, because it feels like she's back to working face, or at least tweener for the time, which isn't surprising, because, man, once she actually got in the ring, massively over again, which was very refreshing to see. Very refreshing to see. Do you want to see Mercedes with the stable at some point?
I would love that. I really wanted her to kind of be paired up with someone like a Megan Bain or a Camille, but giving her a whole stable of female wrestlers would be also cool. And it's not something that she's like adverse to, because, you know, one of her best runs in WWE was alongside Bayley as the golden role model. So her working with other people always kind of seems where Mercedes is at her best. So I wouldn't mind that at all.
Well, I wouldn't mind knowing who else is in the SP3 ROH Hall of Fame.
So I'm going to give you two names. And like I said, I appreciate you guys in the chat giving us a whole bunch of names. I think I saw Adam Cole, Eddie Edwards. You guys are more kind of going into like the 2010s, but I don't know if you're understanding the theme that I'm going for here. These are more early kind of pioneers of Ring of Honor.
Guys, so just that, this you year's know, class, you know?
Yeah, this is this year's
class. We'll do another year's class in a little bit.
Exactly. Well, I'll give you 2025 and 2024. So I will give you 2025 in the future. You guys are giving me a whole bunch of great names to put in the 2025 class, but we're focusing more on the early 2000s era of Ring of Honor. So I'm going to give you three names. I'm going big before we give you the headliner to close out the show. So three big names coming up. So my group says, I'm basing this off of the class of 2022. If you don't remember, that was Samoa Joe, CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, the Briscoes, and Kerry Silken. So you got to have a group in there. So I decided to pair up, because I'm going to give you a history-making inductee, the first ever female inductee into the Ring of Honor Hall of Fame. And it's in a group because the greatest love story in Ring of Honor history was Jimmy Jacobs and Lacey. So they are going into the 2024 class of the Ring of Honor Hall of Fame together, because, man, when I first started watching Ring of Honor, that was one of my favorite stories. Lacey. Oh, my God. It's the jam of all jams. It's the love song of all love songs. The hopeless romantic Jimmy Jacobs, his rivalry with BJ Whitmer, with Lacey in the middle of it, Lacey being the manager for them as Ring of Honor tag team champions, and then his love becoming into the darkness that became the Age of the Fall, and then the love triangle with Jimmy Jacobs, Lacey, and Austin Aries. There's just so much story between those two that they deserve to go into the Ring of Honor Hall of Fame together. And then two pioneers of Ring of Honor wrestling, the first ever heel, the first person who did not respect the code of honor, our current Adam Pearce, Tony Khan Avatar, EVP, Christopher Daniels, the Fallen Angel, because Christopher Daniels was the first big heel with the prophecy of Ring of Honor. He should have been a Ring of Honor world champion back in the early 2000s. It shouldn't have taken him like 15 years to then get his first Ring of Honor world championship run, but he is a Ring of Honor world champ, former Ring of Honor world champion, former TV champion, former tag team champion, former six-man champion. So many different eras from Daniels with him and Kazarian, SCU. You had the early days with the prophecy.
Prophecy, his tag team with Matt Sydal. The list goes on and on. Rivalry after rivalry, tag team after tag team. Christopher Daniels deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And my guy, my New York brethren, yes, the man that made me go to the Hammerstein Ballroom at Final Battle 2006 because I was so in love with his chase of the Ring of Honor World Championship. And I got to be there and I got to say to Julius Smoke, I got five on it when he wins the Ring of Honor World Championship. Homicide is in the class of 2024 because he should have been in that first class. Homicide is one of the OGs upon OGs of Ring of Honor as a heel, as a babyface. So many great rivalries, whether it be against Samoa Joe, Colt Cabana, the list goes on and on. But the Final Battle 2006, my first ever independent show, watching him beat Bryan Danielson and end, in my eyes, the greatest reign of a Ring of Honor world champion of all time, is a memory that will be with me forever. So Homicide is in the Hall of Fame.
You know what's interesting is Nigel McGuinness is not on your list.
I did say I have a headliner.
Oh,
I mean, hope. That's not a prediction. It's a spoiler.
Okay. I'm just saying we've snubbed him. Even when his list was given, it couldn't be about him because you put Danielson at number one as his rival. It just
so you see what I'm doing here. You see what I'm doing? I'm giving him a, you know what? Freaking, you goaded me into it. Yes, the headliner is one of the greatest Ring of Honor world champions of all time. Nigel McGuinness is my headliner for this Hall of Fame because Nigel does not get enough respect. Anytime we talk about Nigel McGuinness, it seems like in his Ring of Honor ring, we always got to talk about Bryan Danielson. So he's getting the main spot. Bryan can induct him into the Hall of Fame.
There it is.
Yeah, he can show some love and say some respectful things about Nigel while Nigel goes on Collision and shits all over him. So we are all here for Nigel McGuinness, the headliner of the class of 2024.
Not a single clam will be dug on that day. Okay, it'll just be Bryan Danielson saying nice things about Nigel McGuinness on SV3's Hall of Fame class. But Danielson went in last year, didn't he?
He went in 2022.
Yeah, so there you go. So even now, the rivalry continues because it took SV3's Hall of Fame, not the initial class, to induct Nigel McGuinness, which is deplorable, honestly, in my opinion. But hey, speaking of absolute garbage, what are they doing with Trish and Deora? See, Delgado, Harley's improving, but what are we doing with Trish? Let Trish feud with Diamante until Death Before Dishonor. That would be great. And Meet Norbus saying, sorry I'm late. You never have to apologize. I was conducting neat business. I figure anytime you're not here, that's what you're up to. But how many champs were on the show? And was any ground proven on ROH? Dark Elevator. No ground proven.
Dark Elevator.
Dark Elevator is really good. Dark Elevator is really good. We might have to steal that one from you, Meet Norbus. No ground proven, but two champions. And we do have some stories, at least. But also, very, very multi-person heavy show today. But we get Harley Cameron defeating Trish Adora. Now, I will say I'm pretty impressed by Harley Cameron this early, and I thought tonight was a really great showcase for her because she was very good at controlling the pacing of her match, which, considering she's had like three TV matches, like that usually takes people a long time to get, but she was really able to like make it methodical. Commentary called this out too, like slowed stuff down and started picking at certain parts and locked into some sort of like more submission-based stuff. And I feel like a lot of times, I hate to say it, but like especially with women's wrestling, with newer talent, there's like this urge to go a million miles an hour. Very impressed that Harley Cameron didn't do that. However, her beating the New Japan globally trained veteran, most badass woman in the world, part of the infantry, most noted indie talent for multiple years probably, after being here for a cup of coffee is horseshit. I'm sorry. Like, that there's very few things that genuinely like piss me off. And I feel like I get one of them every ROH, and 90% of the times it's Trish Adora jobbing for no fucking reason. It drives me crazy. But you do have Harley Cameron slowing things down and Trish Adora putting her in a bow tie submission, which looked really, really good. Trish Adora should use that a lot because it looked nasty. And you have Adora fighting back, spamming some hips into Harley Cameron's face, which I loved, but she misses the Lariat Tubman, and Harley Cameron capitalizes with a running knee. There are actually zero problems with the match. There are so many issues with the context of this match. The amount of experience, the skill level, how clean it was. It is inexplicable what they have not done with Trish Adora when you now have two titles. Nobody like going toward them outside of the contender. So you're not having other women building wins. Except, I guess, maybe Harley Cameron, who should not be in line for a title shot at any point soon. You have tons of multi-women matches. Like, what the hell are you not doing with Trish Adora? And it's not like she's floating back between Collision and here a bunch, like we've seen other people doing. This was extremely frustrating. I was very, very frustrated by this. And I knew it was going to happen, too. And that's what pisses me off. It was predictable because of how bad their booking patterns can be. And that was the case here. And I was mad. And so now I'm complaining about it on the internet to you.
Hey, it is fair. I both agree and disagree with you. I think that, yes, Harley Cameron is improving. But boy, oh boy, whenever she was on offense, I was like, she's so green. She's so green.
She, and she is. She's like four matches in, right?
I know she's had four matches in, but it's just like, there was just so many, like, oh, it was just like, what am I watching? Why is Trish Adora have to sell for this? Why does Trish Adora have to go through this? And she hits a nice little snap suplex, and she did the bridge, which I never really see. Like, Trish Adora always does a move in a matchup that I'm just like, oh, I've never seen that before. I just want more for Trish Adora. I agree with you. I think that she is one of the best female wrestlers that they have that doesn't seem to kind of have a role or be in contendership a lot for these things. Has she had a matchup with like Athena for the Ring of Honor Women's World Championship? I don't remember it if it happened. And Athena's had like 1,000 freaking title defenses. So why can't Trish Adora be a new challenger for her? And like Harley Cameron, I like her. I think that her and Mariah May had a really good matchup on Dynamite. I did not like the matchup with Timeless Toni Storm. It's like every other matchup I like from Harley Cameron.
Which makes sense when she's this green. Like it.
When you're just starting out, I understand. Like you're gonna have some good matches if you're in there with someone that's as good as Mariah May. Then if you have someone who's more of a like a character beast, like Timeless Toni Storm, I didn't like that matchup. Then she was in the tag team matchup with Saraya and her versus Timeless Toni Storm and Mariah May. I liked that match, and then this one, I didn't like the matchup. So it's just like it's every other matchup I seem to be liking from her. But as far as like when she's on like taking the offense, I think she does really well to sell everything, and she plays that part very well. When she is on offense, she knows how to play to the crowd and get a reaction. So there are things that's why I said I do agree with the part that she is improving, because she's only had like a handful of matches so far. But it's just like whenever I see, and it's the same thing when I'm watching NXT, when I see someone who is in developmental and just training and just starting out, it's just like, I kind of cringe watching them on offense sometimes, because not everything is going to come off well. And that's what I felt like when Harley was on offense in this matchup.
That's fair. And what's kind of funny is I feel like the harder parts that develop later with a lot of wrestlers are the things she's good at now. Like it's almost backwards. Like match pacing is tough. Selling is tough. Getting those crowd reactions, having the wherewithal to evoke them is not something I feel like that usually comes along till later. Normally it's the, I can do this move, I can do that move, I can't string them together, I have no idea how to pace a match because that's impossible when you're first starting out. Like it's so funny that it almost feels to me reversed of what I see. Like when I look at Tiffany Stratton's growth in NXT, you could see her be like, okay, I know how to do moves. Okay, now I know how to string the moves together. Okay, now I know how to sell. Okay, now I get the psychology. And I feel like Harley Cameron's like on the other way. So some of that's probably nerves, to be honest. And part of that is just being new at this. But this is what's hard when you have NXT's a great comparison, because you have a hybrid, like standalone and developmental brand colliding. And you need Harley Cameron to get better. And she's going to do that by working with people that are as great as Trish Adora. Trish Adora losing? Not into it. Into it at all. Shame Monster saying Trish still getting that early Willow and AEW go out there and look up at the lights for some weird reason. Tony Khan, explain. Seriously, explain. You know, it's so weird too, because there's so much, this is more for you to speak to than me, but like there are a lot of incredible Black women's wrestlers in AEW, and the treatment of them has been so much better than we've seen historically. Even in AEW's short time, never mind across all of wrestling. Like Athena and Queen Aminata are going to be your title picture. Athena and Willow being the first women's main event. Mercedes and Willow and AEW, right? We're seeing such better treatment of that. But it does still feel like, I have this instinct, I don't know if you do, but when you see like a hot white girl who is very new and not good at this, beating a veteran Black woman, like that rings alarm bells for me. And they have a track record that has countered that pretty significantly. So it doesn't, I think that's just like in me as a wrestling fan, and maybe hopefully not the truth, but she has been buried for so long that I'm like, what are we doing? Cause she gets consistent reps. Lady Frost seems to have moved on to the main roster. Like the people that were coming in the same time as her seem to have gotten wins that have meant something. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is, but I feel like she is an absolute star in every capacity.
Yeah, like I have like PTSD or a little voice in the back of my head that just be like, yeah, I have those memories of the Big Swole tweets and stuff like that when stuff like this happens, even with like on AEW television, like, you know, Swerve becomes the first ever, you know, Black AEW world champion. Did you know that this week's Dynamite was the first time since he became champion that he kicked off the show?
Really? Well, he kicked off a Collision, but not a Dynamite. Okay.
Not the Dynamite. That's the first time in 2 months he kicked off the main AEW show. Like, that was mind-blowing to me. When I heard his music to kick off the show, I was like, wait, this is the first time since he became champion he's kicking off Dynamite? It is just like, yeah, I want more of this because he felt like the main character of the show. I want more for these Black performers because, yes, AEW has made so much strides from that time when Big Swole talked about their diversity. They've made an effort, you know, whether it's the Acclaimed, whether it's Swerve Strickland, whether it's, you know, Athena and what she's done in Ring of Honor. And, you know, you have Red Velvet and Queen Aminata as top contenders going after the championships there. So they've come such a long way that I want to keep that consistency, keep going forward. Don't take any steps back. I want to keep going forward on pushing these, you know, diversity in AEW. So I'm hoping that this is just a blip on the radar and they realize that Harley Cameron needs reps. She doesn't exactly need wins.
Yeah. And I think ROH is the perfect place for her to get those. It's just tough because they've already incorporated her into an act with Saraya, right? And you're probably looking, I'm guessing you're looking at Saraya and Mercedes at some point.
Yeah, so, like, it feels like
play. So I think you
actually, I wanted to compliment you because that's a great comparison of Harley Cameron to Tiffany Stratton, because Tiffany Stratton got the character down before she got anything wrestling wise. And that's what Harley Cameron has done. She's been a good character since she came in with QTV. She was the one that stood out in all those segments, and now she's with Saraya, and she's actually makes Saraya more palpable to me a little bit when she's on camera with her. So she's got the character work down. She just needs reps in the ring to get better there.
100% agree. I think she could play like a Carmella-ish role too, where it's like, I don't know if she's gonna have the world's best in-ring career, but not every single person does. But I think Carmella was drastically underrated in what she could do as a character. And I think you're going to see Harley Cameron kind of, especially with Bunny being gone now, like in a similar role, I think could be really good.
And Kane Horn, the first Dynamite after the pay-per-view he won, he did not kick off the show. They actually did a best friends angle with Chuck and Trent and Orange Cassidy to kick off that episode on Jacksonville. Kate's right. The only show that he's kicked off the actual program was the Collision after the pay-per-view, not Dynamite. That was the first Dynamite this week that he kicked off the show.
And there was something strategic with that, because I forget what the lead-in was, but I was like, yeah, oh, I understand what they're doing. Yeah.
The NBA playoffs was the lead-in for that Collision, and that's why they wanted to draw that rating.
That made sense. That made sense. Well, we move along to our main event. So last call for Super Chats. We'll have the TNA crew on the back of it, but I loved what we got here. Not only as a Bad Dude Tito stan, but I just thought this match was a whole bunch of fun for a lot of reasons. Yeah, Daddy Magic on commentary, which was great. But you do have Mike Bennett pinning Tito for the victory in this. Commentary, so great at, again, here. With the Steiner Brothers comparison, I loved talking about how Cabrera and Tito have been together for over a decade. A lot of times you saw in this match Cabrera's size becoming a factor, which I thought was really good. And something that I love about Tito, and I love, honestly, part of my TMDK stanhood, every single person in TMDK, it to me ends up being such an interesting hot tag. And Tito is one that's just a blast. He gets a hot tag and he just goes and beats the hell out of you in the corner a lot of times, like just throwing lariats and arms or whatever. Some fun work on the outside here. A lot of really fun tandem offense from the Wolf Zaddies. Lost my mind with laughter when Caprice had to explain to Daddy Magic what a zaddy was. I was in stitches, but we saw Tito before against Gringo Loco, I think, and it was a solid match. This felt like there was a little bit more comfort just between, I think, everybody involved, and really, really well-oiled machine with Cabrera and Tito on the other side of this. Again, these proven ground matches getting more time, adding a little bit more excitement, having champions around, adding a little bit more excitement. I'm a Wolves Addies gal. I'm a TMDK gal. I was happy to see it. Happy to see TMDK on Collision with my M&M voice. This is a week booked for Kate. I will take it. But I really liked what we got, and I liked the chemistry. I think Mike Bennett is underrated and how versatile he is with who he can work with. Like, I think that's a huge strength of his. If you throw a high flyer at him, he's going to make it work. You throw someone like Tito or Cabrera at him, going to make it work. But some really sound tag psychology in this. I thought this was fun. It felt like a main event too, which was nice, because sometimes we get those out of order, like Kyle Fletcher and Dalton Castle on third for some reason. But this felt like it was in the spot it belonged in. It was a really exciting match to watch. And the Undisputed Kingdom, don't let the ground get proven, but I thought it was a good way to rock and roll.
I absolutely agree with you. Cabrera, when Cabrera and Tito were introduced, I was like, is this Bad Dude Tito's older brother? They look related. I was like, you look like the same dude. It's like they wedded a clone and they cloned Bad Dude Tito, and we got just Cabrera.
Longer hair,
I've been a fan of Bad Dude Tito since I first saw him in New Japan Strong. I love him, you know, being added to TMDK and being the only American member. And he's also done some great work over at Major League Wrestling, where he's the current national openweight champion. So he's doing his thing all across New Japan, ROH, AEW, MLW. So love seeing Bad Dude Tito get those reps in. I still want to say, I want Bad Dude Tito to make the trip to Japan and be part of the play-in tournament for the G1, because he wanted to be in the G1 2 years ago when he was doing all the tag team matches with Jonah. And I thought this was a really good effort by him and Cabrera. Love the Zaddy's explanation.
It's like a Caprice, cool daddy.
like Zaddy? And he said it with the voice, like Zaddy, like a cool daddy.
And then Matt Menard made him repeat it again. Oh my god.
He's like, say that again. Oh man. The only thing I did laugh
I did not like about this match is I thought that Cabrera should have took the loss. Why is Bad Dude Tito taking the loss in this one? Like that part didn't make sense to me. I was like, Cabrera is very, you know, new to here, but Bad Dude Tito is a guy that I've seen in all these different promotions. I thought they would have protected him from taking the actual loss in this one. I know the team was going to lose going against the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions, and they don't really have, you know, they're not signed here. They don't really have a spot here consistently. So I thought that it would just make sense to give Cabrera the loss instead of Bad Dude Tito, but that's my only nitpick, who took the loss. So that's much better than the last match. So I'll give them
that. Sure.
I did enjoy this one, and I thought this was probably the best match of the night, and Undisputed Kingdom looking good. I would love to see them, because they're kind of like managers on AEW television. I want to see them more like wrestle on ROH at the very least.
Agreed. They have been more consistent, which is good. And I agree with you about Tito taking loss for no other reason than what I said. TMDK is there on Saturday. We've seen the trio of TMDK at Wrestle Dream. Like, he's a little bit more familiar with his audience. So protecting him and having Cabrera take the loss is probably a good call by you. Anyway. But
what a week for TMDK fans, you know, for the unified NJPW Tag Team Champions, IWGP, New Japan Strong Tag Team Champions, Sunday, Robbie Eagles, and my favorite member of TMDK, Ichiban Sweet Boy, Kosei Fujita, gonna win the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champions. He was my MVP of the Best of Super Juniors.
Him, I mean, next year's the year.
Tore it up. Yeah, Ooh. he's a future guy that's going to win that tournament and become an IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. But the first stop is him and Robbie winning those tag team titles from those dastardly War Dogs this Sunday.
I agree with you. That I might have messaged somebody in TMDK and said, I did it when they won. So I took that as a personal victory for myself. But one more super chat before we get Cresta and Joel in here to talk some TNA from Kazaa86 saying, giving me illegal download vibes. I don't know if that's your name, but I used Kazaa as my choice of illegal downloads back in the day. But if you could strip everyone of their respective titles and reset ROH, who are your picks for each title and who are repeatedly featured on ROH? That's a really good question. I feel like Lee Johnson with the TV title would be really, really good call. If I could do anything, it would be to put the ROH world title on Ricky Starks and have him actually down there. Just because I want to see Ricky Starks wrestle. But of who's on the actual program, if you count Shane Taylor as being there consistently, I would say Shane Taylor. And then have Dalton chasing for the TV title probably.
That makes sense.
Tag titles, I'm a big Iron Savages gal, but I'd probably put it on the infantry because it feels earned. And yeah. I'll just keep my women's tag or my women's titles because they make sense. They're there. They have stories.
I agree with you there. If I was to reset the women, I would call Athena up to the AEW main roster and I would just have Queen Aminata as the TV champion and Billy Starks as the ROH Women's World Champion. The main title, I would put it on Kyle Fletcher, the World Championship, because he's like a young guy that you could build Ring of Honor behind. And I feel like he can be an ROH World Champion. I don't think he's World Champion material on AEW quite yet, but he can be an ROH World Champion that you could really build behind. TV title, I would bring Brian Keefe over and spread some learning tree love to the Ring of Honor brand. Hey guys, you better respect Chris Jericho with my ROH TV title. And I would strip Yuta of the Pure title and put it on Lee Moriarty.
Josh Woods!
That's fair. That's fair too. That's fair too.
Fun question. I appreciate that, Chad. Thank you so much. We are going to bring on Joel and Cresta to talk some TNA to you. If you've noticed on our YouTube channel, we have switched up how we do the thumbnails, and it is just really made for Cresta and her incredible pictures that she is sending in.
Honestly, every time I have to do my makeup for anything, I'm like, Kate.
Going all out.
I appreciate it. Please send as many as you can. It makes our...
My favorite one is
thumbnail. Yeah, it's the best. It's the best.
Meanwhile, I sent four, and the person who does our thumbnails only sends uses the same one.
Well, maybe you should take a hint.
Four is my favorite number.
No, hold on, hold on. No, now we're taking shots. Hey, Kate, the name is Kaza, by the way, not Kaza. And it means, it's an Arabic name, and it means treasure or gift.
What a beautiful name.
It is a beautiful name.
When I said it, as a dumb white American, that's what it made me think of.
Way to go, dumb white American.
Yeah.
America.
Did we not know this about me already?
We very much know this. That's just what happens.
Hey, are you guys ready to...
I wish, I will say this before you guys go, and I know I feel like me and Joel have polarizing opinions, but I do wish you guys could have seen that Matt Hardy compound. I cinema, I was sports entertained, I was sports confused, I was sports angry, I was sports happy. I went through the seven stages of sports entertainment, okay? I was wearing sweatpants and I got dressed up because I wanted to be involved.
Look at that. Look at that. She wants to fade away and classify herself as obsolete.
That's how I felt.
Obsolete.
Joel wanted to delete.
Yo,
delete
Joel it. Was like, yo, take me out.
Joel's face right now is incredible. That's the reaction. You don't need to send in any pictures ever again. Your face right now should be on every thumbnail that we have, even on shows that you're not on. That was incredible. Your face was just...
Spoiler alert. You know why this was all dog shit? Because it was all a dream at the end. Because it was all a friggin' dream.
Oh my god.
Super Mario Brothers 2 was all just a dream, but it's still a classic. Don't be that guy, pal.
No, don't do that. Listen. The day started with cookout conversations. I don't want it to end with Hardy compound accusations. I don't want this. I don't want this.
Well, apparently they have one at NXT, so.
Yeah, they have a local one. They have a local one, guys.
Yes, go to the local
cookout, you know?
I don't know if you guys are talking about a local Hardy compound. I'm like, oh, what?
Chris is like, can I visit?
I mean, wait a minute. As you saw the booby traps tonight on TNA, I saw a woman get beheaded and then said, tee-hee. Like, all right, you know, it's very TNA, but also I don't want to go there. Like, Halloween is so far away.
I had people trying to tell me it was AI, and I was like, no, listen to it live.
Oh, man. Well, we're going to let you... I'm going to hang up and listen, because it sounds like I got some things to listen to about this episode of TNA. But guys... Help them out with your super chats. Leave a thumbs up on this video. We thank you so much. Have a wonderful night. We're out of here.
Thanks, guys.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.